Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana, for joining me, I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have J. Roy Makokas. J. Roy is from Saddle Lake, Alberta, but currently resides in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, where he is a full-time student in his second year of university for a Bachelor's of Arts in the Cree language. J. Roy is an Indigenous content creator as well as a journeyman electrician. J. Roy is 9.5 years sober, and on this show, J. Roy courageously shares his story for those that are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome J. Roy Makokas. Hi, J. Roy. How are you?
Hey, Ralph. I'm doing good.
I really appreciate you coming on the show. I wanted to have you on for so long, but our schedules didn't quite meet up. But thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no worries. I've been thinking about this, and I know we've been trying to catch each other. But, you know, our schedule's been pretty busy. I've been a pretty busy guy lately, moving and all that. But I'm glad we get to connect now.
Yeah, definitely. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you, please?
For sure. Danse, Jera Makokas, Natsiga Asun, Unichik Skapune, Kutsinia, Maga Amiskuchi, Waskaigan, Niwi Ginmi, Gwats. So I just introduced myself in my Cree language. My name is J. Roy Makokas. I come from Saddle Lake, Alberta. I currently live in Edmonton, Alberta.
Okay, that's awesome. The way I found you was from your social media, and you have a huge following, like on TikTok. You have like 853,700 followers. How has social media impacted your life this recently from when you started?
It's given me an outlet to share. I do a lot of sharing on there. I do a lot of talking about my sobriety, talking about culture, basically, you know, helping people reconnect. I share a lot of teachings on there, I guess, but I keep the sacred sacred. I just share things that that should be common knowledge. And yeah, it has given me an outlet to share, like I said. One thing I truly believe in is, you know, sharing your story. There's a lot of healing in that, and that's what my elders have always told me. Don't be scared to share your story. And you don't know who's listening. You don't know who you're going to impact. And I've seen it. I've seen many, many people tell me that, you know, my live streams or my videos have helped them. You know, people inboxing me saying that they're starting their sobriety journey. That's such a good feeling, you know. And I didn't realize how big of an impact it actually was. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, definitely. I know social media has played a lot, a big part now that people are able to share their stories and their journeys in mental health, sobriety, you know, the MMIW movement. Native issues in general, you know. I see in your TikTok you do a lot of your cultural activities on there. Has that helped you in your sobriety?
Definitely. I do a lot of hunting. I work with animal hides, so I do the whole process. I hunt, I skin the animal, I cut up the meat, I do it all. And there's a lot of prayer that goes into it, and it keeps me in line. Like, I've been sober now for 9.5 years, and you know, when you get sober, you have to look for things that, you know, you got to keep busy. You got to keep busy. That's one thing I've found. And culture, my culture has really stepped up and helped me with my healing journey. It definitely has aided in keeping me on the straight path, because you can't live, you know, in two worlds. You can't walk two paths. You have to, you know, pick one and be true with it. So yes, my doing all of these things has helped me tremendously.
Yeah, definitely. Can you let us know what things looked like before you got sober?
For sure. I guess if you don't mind, maybe I'll just start from the beginning, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
A little back story, where I grew up and stuff like that. All right, so my mother, she had me when she was 15 years old. She got pregnant at 14. So my mother was, you know, she was a child herself, trying to raise me. And so I was back and forth in between Edmonton with my mother and Saddle Lake with my grandparents. You know, I'm very fortunate that I had my my grandparents, because, you know, a lot of people don't have that one person in their life that is, you know, stable. And I was fortunate enough to have my grandmother to save us during, like, really rough times. So, like I said, I was back and forth up until I was 13. At 13, I moved in with my grandparents full time. Prior to that, I was back and forth to my mother, to my grandparents, basically to whoever was available to watch over me and my brother. And, you know, we've seen a lot of things growing up. We experienced a lot of the ripple effects of the residential school, you know. Just looking at it, you know, my dad's side, his parents and his aunts and uncles, they all attended residential school, and it shows. You know, I would go there in the summertime, and I would see horrible things, but I wouldn't tell my mom or anything or anybody, because I had cousins that were my age, and I just loved being around them, so I wouldn't want to jeopardize not being allowed to go over there. So I you know, my dad, he was not absent in my life, even though I was going over to my grandma's side on his side. He was never there. You know, he was an alcoholic himself, and towards the end of his life, he lost the battle to addiction. He got into some heavy drugs, you know, like crack, and so he passed away when I was 15. But I seen many, many things. Even, you know, going out there to my grandparents' house, they would, you know, we'd be given free range, basically free range to do whatever. So us too, we were getting into trouble, you know, stealing. We were drinking, smoking weed, and, you know, at a young age. And then my mom's side, you know, they weren't as affected as to the residential school, but, you know, there was still a lot of dysfunction on that side. And but just, I was just thinking about that lately, like the difference, like how much, you know, a family is exposed to the residential school as opposed to the other side that isn't. You know, there's still, it's pretty amazing, pretty crazy. I grew up between Saddle Lake and Edmonton. My grandfather on my mom's side, my mom's dad, he was a ceremonial man. He practiced our ceremonial ways, and he was the only person in my family that did that. And he would take me all over, as I remember as a young kid, take me all over to these ceremonies, and I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand any of it. All I knew was that it was a safe place to be. So if I didn't, if he didn't take me to those places, I wouldn't have known that that was somewhere I could go in times of need. You know, see, what he was doing, he was connecting my spirit to our ways at such a young age. Even though I didn't know, understand what it was, there was a connection happening. And I'm so grateful for that, because when it was time for me to sober up, that's the first place that I went, was our ceremonies. And I always tell people, you know, bring your children to ceremony, bring your children to, you know, to anything cultural, because they're going to remember that. It's going to stick in their brain. They're going to remember that that's a safe place. And I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, my grandfather passed away when I was 16, and there was a time there that I was, it was a dark place for me, because he was my only connection to culture, and I didn't know where to go from there, right? So I got into, you know, experimenting, got into alcohol, and, you know, I've already drank before that. I drank my first drink at 13 years old, and but I wasn't like right into it. I just every other weekend or whatever, when I'd be hanging out with friends, and then when my grandfather died, that's when it got worse, turned into every weekend type of thing, and I smoked weed and drank. I never got into any hard drugs or anything like that. But, that continued on till I was, how old was I when I sobered up? I sobered up at, my first attempt was, I believe, at 21. And, when I sobered up, I remember I was working at a youth center in Saddle Lake. And every supper time, they had an elder come in. You know, they fed the children. It was an after-school program, and they fed the children. And this elder came in. I remember his name was Cal. I still have a connection with Cal to this day. He would sing with the children. He would sing drum song just before supper, just, I guess, to, you know, calm the children down. And, you know, it was a blessing song of some sort. And I looked up to this man so much, the way he carried himself, his family values. You know, he was a strong, indigenous, proud man. He had a long braid. And I was just in awe of this guy. I was just, oh man, I really need to meet this guy. I need to just ask him questions. I want to be like him. I want to be, because, you know, I was still struggling with, you know, trying to get sober and stuff like that. And I had short hair at the time, and I asked him, hey, Cal, can I talk to you? I gave him some tobacco. You know, tobacco, when you want to ask a question, you give tobacco. So I said, Cal, I don't know what to do. I'm at a point in my life. I got two children now. You know, I don't want to continue that cycle. I don't want to continue that cycle anymore. And I've seen a lot in my life. I don't want to be that person. And I begged him, you know, help me. And he just listened. He just listened to what I had to say. And then as I remember asking him how long it took him to grow his braid, and he's like, oh, it took 8 years. And he's like, you know what, Jeroy, I have a sweat lodge at my house, and we have a sweat every Sunday. You know, I want you to come by and come and sweat with us. So sure enough, I went sweat, and right there, I just was hooked. It was such a beautiful thing to see our people together, you know, expressing themselves. You know, in the sweat lodge, they express themselves with love. They talk to each other with kindness. They help each other, and it's a beautiful thing to see, you know, because you don't see that out in the world, people just talking like the way they talk in ceremony. So I loved it. I stayed sober that time for 2.5 years. And, you know, 2.5 years, after 2.5 years, I slipped. I had a little slip and I drank for a whole summer. And, you know, it was the last time I drank. I got in an argument with my kid's mother and woke up the kids and we were screaming at each other. My brother was there, so he's like, "Jero, we need to get out of here. I need to get you out of here," because I was like blacked out drunk. And I remember he took me to his dad's place. His dad is also, me and my brother, we have different dads, same mother. He took me to his dad's place and I had a lot of respect for his dad. His dad is a ceremonialist. He practices, you know, our ways. And I remember being, vaguely remember being at his house, and his dad had a visitor at the time visiting. And I went upstairs and I sat on the couch and I was like drunk and I was making a fool out of myself. And I just remember those guys just being silent. They didn't even say nothing. And then it clicked. I was like, "What am I doing? Why am I up here?" I went back downstairs and the next day I got up and I left. And I remember feeling so guilty, you know, like I just got in a big argument with my girlfriend, and my kids seeing me, you know, they seen me drunk. And, you know, then I went and disrespected my brother's dad. You know, I was just so embarrassed, so ashamed, you know, like, this isn't me, man. I was two and a half years sober. I need to, you know, try again. I need to try again. And then I tried again, and I remember going to a sweat a few days later, and I just brought, you know, I brought prayer cloth, I brought tobacco, I brought sweetgrass, and I gave it to the elder, and I said, "Pray for me, please. I don't want to live like this. I know I can do better. I just need guidance. I need, you know, spirits to guide me. I want to live a good life." And I put everything into that prayer, and I cried, and that elder, you know, he prayed for me there. And then I met this, right after that, I met this man. This man, he was from Muscogee. He took me under his wing when it comes to the culture, and he taught me how to sing. He taught me how to, you know, pray. He taught me how to just be a good person, you know. How to be a dad, you know, all these things you learn in ceremony. That's the beautiful thing about ceremony, is you learn all of these life skills that, you know, some of us weren't fortunate enough to learn growing up because of the dysfunction we lived in, you know. So I just followed, I just kept going and going and going and putting everything into my prayer. And I truly believe prayer works. I've seen miracles happen, you know. I've seen our ceremonies, our way of life has gotten our people through the toughest of times. They've got us through thousands of years of, you know, of living, and got us through, you know. it's our duty to connect our children to those ways. And you know, our ancestors, you know, they went underground with these ceremonies, so that's how I think. I owe it to them. Like, they sacrificed the risk of being jailed, being killed, just because they weren't allowed to practice, but they kept our ways going. And so all of us can have somewhere to turn, you know. So yeah, that's some of my story there, you know.
Yeah, man, I got goosebumps listening to you. So was it difficult for you to get sober when you decided to?
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, it's crazy. I was having a conversation with somebody recently, and I've always noticed this, that, you know, it seems that people that still, you know, drink and still, you know, party lots, it seems like things just go good for them sometimes. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen that, like, but I guess it's what people want to portray on social media. But
oh,
it just,
yeah,
looks like everything's going good. They don't go through any struggles. They're just, you know, living party life, and they don't have to worry about this, don't that. And somehow they're always partying. They always have money to do this. And yeah. So, yeah, it was hard, because all my friends my age, like, you know, growing up with people I know, there's the, you know, to this day they're still in that battle, and some of them have passed on, you know, from the struggles. You know, it was hard because you truly need a plan. You need an action plan of how you're going to stay sober, whether that be, you know, the steps, whether that be, you know, get a sponsor, AA meetings, you know, all of it. You know, culture for me is where is what I used. I just talked that after that last time when I got sober again, I actually started talking, because the first 2.5 years I tried, I didn't really say too much. I didn't really want to share too much because, you know, it's kind of embarrassing. I felt, you know, the type of life that I came from, and I started talking. I started expressing and telling in ceremony and crying and actually not being afraid to cry, because, man, that's true strength. When I see elders in ceremony and they can just cry and just express themselves like that, I'm like, dang, one day I want to be able to just do that, express and get that out of my system and just cry freely. You know, I do cry, but to this, I do cry. It's just, it takes a lot for me to, you know, to cry. Certainly some things, like when I watch video movies and there's scenes of a dad and a son, like, you know, that stuff, oh man, I'll just cry just like that, because I think it's that inner child, like something that I've always wanted, like to be able to have a connection with a father figure, which, you know, I did, I guess I could say I had little periods, short periods of my life where I did have connections to men, like growing up. So definitely, having a plan, that is important. Finding hobbies, finding new hobbies. That's when I got into, the traditional stuff, making drums, working on hides, hunting. You know, I just was so fascinated with our culture, and I just had a hunger. I had a hunger for knowledge, and that's what really helped me the second go around getting sober, was really applying myself and really having that hunger, like I said.
So what does your life look like now?
I'm in school right now. I'm in my second year for a Bachelor of Arts in Nihio Wiwin, the Cree language. It's a 3-year program, so I'm doing that, full-time student. Second year. I'm just about done my second year here in June, and then September I'll be starting my last year. And I don't know what I'm going to be doing after that. I don't know if I'm going to use this degree to get a job or go back to my previous employment. I'm a journeyman electrician by trade. It's definitely a different, tough transition, you know, especially in times like today, in these times, you know, everything's so expensive, and it's living off of a student wage. I'm so fortunate that my band, they pay for my schooling, and they give me a little living allowance every month to get by. But my main goal for getting into school is just to learn the language, you know, learn as much as I can, because, you know, you're not going to become fluent after 3 years. It's just not going to happen. It's just, so after school, I'm planning to just keep going with it. You know, there's a lot of programs here in the city, you know, conversational Cree groups, and I got to do, you know, just keep up with my part. But yeah, my ultimate goal was just to get a grasp of my language that I wasn't fortunate to learn, you know, due to, you know, colonization, you know, residential schools, and yeah.
If there was somebody who is struggling right now with either drugs or alcohol, how would you encourage them?
Well, I'd definitely tell them that they have a purpose in life. They're definitely worth it. You know, a lot of us feel like we're just not capable because we've never experienced that type of life before, or we've never seen it growing up. And I would just tell them, you know, agamemok kaipome, in my language that means keep going, you know, persevere, you know, you got this. Yeah, it's a process, you know. If you fall, you just got to get back up. Like I said, that's what I always tell people. When, like, I was 2.5 years sober, I was like, I was getting there, and then I fell. And, you know, I did wallow in self pity, and I might as well just keep going and living like this. But I looked at my two little children, and I got to keep going, you know. And I got back up. So just dust yourself off, try again. It's sobriety is not a linear path. Like, there's, you know, it's gonna take some time. It's gonna take some work, and just go into it knowing that the longer, you know, you sit with that guilt, you know, the longer that it's gonna take to get back on track. So just be kind to yourself, you know. That's what I would say.
Yeah, man, definitely. It is so easy to fall into that hole when you're feeling like that, you know. J-Roy, where can people find you, like, on your socials and stuff like that?
Both my socials, my handles for all my socials are the same. It's J-Roy McCokis. That's all you got to search in TikTok or Instagram or Facebook. But I do a lot of native humor. I don't really have, like, a niche that I follow. It's just me. You just get me, I guess. But yeah, J-Roy McCokis on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook.
Heck yeah, you need that humor though, you know. Sometimes people who are on a recovery journey have some dark humor, you know. but all in good fun, and humor is a medicine too, you know. So I really appreciate you on all you do and everything that you're putting out there is awesome. On the road to 1 million, man. Right?
Yeah.
On the road to 1 million followers. Oh my gosh. That's so awesome. J-Roy, thank you so much for agreeing to come on my show and sharing your story and uplifting our native people. So, Rihanna, from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
Yes, Kanaskumten. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we actually got to get this done.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project on 101.9 FM CKLB, the voice of Dinadé, serving Yellowknife and the surrounding communities in Northwest Territories, Canada. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.